Good morning and welcome to the Daily Recollection. Good morning, Sherry.
Good morning, Ashwini.
By compassionate livelihood that brings no discredit. In the Buddha's time, compassionate livelihood meant not to earn one's living by trading in weapons, sex, slaves, poisons, intoxicants, or products of killing of any kind. It may be safe to assume that someone following a spiritual path is not indulging in a livelihood that is on the Buddhist no harm list. But since it's never the content and always the process, as practitioners, we are invited to look deeply at whether the choices we make in the domain of our livelihood qualify as compassionate. Whatever the label for our chosen field of work, accountant, yoga teacher, artist, IT engineer, musician, editor, cook, teacher, nurse, coach, librarian, therapist, add your own. Whether we benefit from it financially or not, whether it is categorized as work or not, does it meet the criteria of no harm? The 34th seed comes with a qualifier, compassionate livelihood that brings no discredit. The qualifier offers a framework to avoid the confusion that inevitably arises when conditioned mind tries to figure out what no harm is. Discredit, noun, loss or lack of reputation, honor or respect. As we make choices in the many aspects that constitute livelihood, we're invited to consider whether our choices align with true nature. Since we're the only species that deviates from being in accordance with the way, as far as we know, can we recalibrate to it, the way, as a practice of not discrediting, dishonoring, disrespecting its nature? We're deeply conditioned to act from identification with the illusion of separation from life. The 34th bead offers the possibility of making choices from a sense of oneness with all that is. And since the nature of any choice is shaped by the moment, our only choice as practitioners of the way is always the choice for presence. Here's our first caller. You are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, it's Loren in Connecticut.
Hey, Loren.
Hi.
It's a big one, huh?
It's a big one. It's a big one, and I'm, you know, it often takes me some time to actually, like, read and record and listen with the assignment, and I saw this one, and I went, okay, I'm going to start working on this one right away.
Yeah.
And what I was recording about this weekend is, you know, I was called to, you know, you've talked many times about how people in this practice often are people who are very concerned about being good people. And, you know, at a relatively young age, I decided to work in healthcare and that I was going to be of service and take care of people and even that I was going to work in an aspect of healthcare that's quite stigmatized because it was something I felt up to the challenge of that other people might not feel like they could do. And so I had all this like idealism and, you know, now having worked in the healthcare system for 15 years, I feel much more complicated about it than I did when I was 19 and I didn't even know what it was. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just all the institutionalized ego that exists, you know, in the system around, I mean, how it's intertwined with capitalism and profit and who's right and who's wrong and who are the you know, there's just so much, you know, conditioning on the institutional scale that one of the ways that I've been made to suffer is that, you know, I was drawn to work in this because I wanted to be a good person and be in service. And now, you know, conditioning often runs this story that well, I'm, you know, how good can I really be participating in this system?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which is an important place for each of us, Lorraine, because what I hear in that is a departure from being from a concern about being a good person, which I think comes from the heart, and a concern about ego standards and our lifelong trauma that's involved with trying to meet impossible moving standards that ego only puts out to cause suffering.
Yes.
Yeah, because you're never going to figure that out.
No.
I mean, that's the reality. Yeah, you're never going to figure that out. Because whatever you do, that voice is going to come in and say, well, but what about? And then there's the suffering. So to bring it back to you, right, to you, to there you are with another human. There you are doing your job, being what you are there to do. There's where we want to be looking deeply into how we're doing.
Yeah, it's gotten so, you know, complicated because of, like, the stress of it sometimes and all these standards from conditioning. There have been, you know, I've been in a time where I've decided to work less and to only work part-time. And then, of course, then ego just flips to the other side of, you know, all the privileges that I have to be able to, you know, not work full time and to work less. So of course, you know, I do see that the, you know, because then that becomes like the other side of the coin is that I'm pulling back and I'm not engaging as much and I'm not all in the way that I used to be of trying, you know, that I, you know, now I just show up and sort of part-time and do the best I can while I'm there. But it, you know, I'm actually not working very much. So.
That's right. And Lorraine, again, this is so important for all of us because when you step back from it, you can see that all ego is doing is making you, controlling you, first of all. I don't know if you were with us yesterday, but controlling you and making your life smaller and smaller as you try to please it. And so the opportunity for us as practitioners is, what if we threw ego out of our life? Then what might we choose to do with our time and energy and life force with no ego? Because otherwise, it's easy for me to to look ahead and suspect that what it's going to try to do to you is get you to end that work altogether, to try to figure out something that you could do where you wouldn't suffer like this. But what's making the decision is the source of suffering. So it's going to say, well, if you did that, or if you went there, if you were different in this way, then if you, right? And that system is the cause of suffering, not the medical system or institutionalized egocentricity or anything. No. It's the very one inside our own head.
Yes.
And we'll never be able to get away from it.
And
we
just
have
so
to
it's
end
on
it.
The record and it's clear, you saying to look at this without conditioning is not you saying that it's wrong that I'm working less.
Oh, I think that as you continue to throw ego out of your life, you will become interested in participating and contributing in ways that you can't even imagine now.
Mm.
And you probably won't think of it as work. But take the steps rather than trying to figure them out.
Yeah, interesting.
So,
okay.
So as you work less, in theory, it'll give you more time and energy to focus on Xing ego out of your life.
Yeah.
And as you do that, then see what life has for you.
And yeah, what conditioning right. always... Okay, yes. Thank you.
open air, bigger
yeah,
conversation.
Yes, yeah. Okay, yes, thank you.
Or, Lorraine, come to SQUIM. We can have lots of long conversations.
Okay, yeah.
All right, good.
Thank you.
Take care.
Gosh,
thanks, Lauren. You know, Sherry, it reminds me of that Krishnamurti quote, it's no measure of health to be well-adjusted to a profoundly sick society.
Uh-huh.
Which is that whole conversation of what is participation, right? And the direction that you're pointing us to is to not question the participation in an institutionalized ego projection, but to question our participation with that inside ourselves. And that's where the change happens.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Yeah. Again, that to realize that, well, if that were all of those ideas that ego puts forth are just to deepen the trap it has us in, believing
right.
that some other place, some other time, some other way is going to be there'll be less suffering in that. No, there won't, because as long as we're looking to ego, we're going to suffer no matter where we are.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right, here's our next caller. You are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Michelle in Mountain View, California.
Hey, Michelle.
Hi. Just threw myself in the queue because it's aisle and just risk it, right? And I haven't really thought through, but I guess that's not what we're about, what I want to talk about, but... livelihood. So I teach in a university, and I'm not working right now because, well, I got COVID back in February, and I'm still having effects from it so that I can't work right now. So there's a lot of, kind of the identity of who I am, what I do, and not doing that right now. And there's this, am I going to be able to do it in September? And, so there's just like it's a big piece of content right now. And one big gift from it is that I've been able to practice. And I'm on these calls every day, and they're available for me. And I remember once there was a workshop we did, it was a online, a remote workshop, and it was about what job you do, I think, and that when someone asks you, what do you do, right, we just normally answer our profession, I'm a teacher, or I'm a, and then there was this idea of like, well, maybe, what I do is I practice conscious compassionate awareness, that's my job one, and that's kind of like my first identity. And everything else is kind of secondary to that. And so I've kind of been living into that recently, and letting go of the identity that, I'm this kind of teacher. And if I'm not doing that, then I'm somehow, not fully doing what I should be doing. And so that's kind of
yes.
what's up. Yeah.
So several things about that, right, Michelle? So I think it was last year, a year before that, the focus of the year-long retreat was stepping into what is your profession. You're a professional awareness practitioner. Because that level of commitment to waking up becomes the not so much the identity, because we want to get past all identities, and being a spiritual practitioner as an identity comes with its own problems, right? The same problems that any identity comes with.
Right.
Because it's all about, then it becomes about the ego. But that that recalibration to your primary sort of, let's just, task is a difficult, not an appropriate word, but that's your orientation, that waking up, ending suffering is what you prioritize above everything else. It's what your life is about. Mm-hmm. And the clarity in that allows you to basically look at everything from that context. Is this causing me to suffer or is it not? If it's causing me to suffer, I'm going to look at it towards letting it go. If it isn't, I'm going to stay here with it, right, if it's of my benefit. Because then it gets taken out of the realm of the content that conditioning always has us in. Well, are you a good teacher or a bad teacher? Can you do this job or you cannot do this job? When we start believing the content of, within quotes, the worldly identities that we are in, then we get lost, right? Mm-hmm. We're lost in it. And so the clarity of who you are or what you are or what your life is about really, really resets the ability to look at everything else from a perspective that's helpful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and very much the, you know, in the beginning of the year long, the weekly assignments of the sort of that singular reliance on turning to practice, right, and nothing else.
Yes.
Yes. And I've been, that was really big. So even this, right, even this, even this, I turn to practice. I turn to truth.
The Dharma and the Sangha. Yes, absolutely. I turn to the truth. And in that direction, we're letting the intelligence that animates inform and guide our lives, rather than the system that we've relied on all the time. But unless we practice it with that level of singularity, that level of leaning into that you're talking about, and embrace it fully, that isn't going to be where we can live from, where we can work from, where we can enjoy our lives from.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So profound.
Yeah. It is, and simple too at the same time.
And then we can express the gratitude for the difficult situation which deprived you of a habitual identity that then allows you to transcend that.
Just keep turning to the truth, turning to what's true, and trust. Yeah.
Yes.
Trust that I'm on the path, whatever path, you know, life has for me. And so that's what I choose over and over again in each, you know, each moment I'm here for that I can remember. It's just choosing that. So that's my job right now.
That's exactly right. It's our job in every moment.
Yeah.
Thank you. That's so inspiring.
Thank you.
That is inspiring. It's simple. It's profound. It's our job. And we can trust that we're on the path, that we're being guided. We're being guided home. We don't have to turn to ego to tell us whether we're doing the right thing or the wrong thing. We can turn to the intelligence that animates us and trust.
Yes, and you know, here again is that other favorite poem of mine, that the forest will find you. And part of when we're lost, it's because we have to learn to be found.
Yes, exactly. Yes, we have to learn to trust a deeper guide.
That's exactly right. And the form of a life that is not a conditioned or egocentric one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of, we're learning to be nobody.
Yes, that's right.
And
we're
to
learning
be happy
to be
about
nobody.
It.
And to be completely delirious about that. Yeah. All right. Mm-hmm. Here's our next caller. You're now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hey, this is Dan in Minnesota.
Hey, Dan.
Hey. I've been realizing, you know, since this assignment came out that for however many years I've been doing practice, this bead, no matter how...
Oh, Dan, I just lost you. No matter how...
It's about how.
Oh, darn. I heard it's about how.
Also, Dan, you're blipping out.
I'm blipping out. Okay, give me a second
to... Okay, now you're good?
Now I'm good? Great. So,
now you're good.
Good. I was saying this this beat has always been about what, and I'm it's sinking in. It's not about what. It's about how.
Aha. Uh-huh. Say a little more, sir.
Yeah, well, so it's, you know, whenever attention is turned to this beat, conditioning supplies me with healthy ways to practice. I mean, this is sarcastic, right? They're not healthy because they're from conditioning. Looking at, well, why am I doing the job that I'm doing? And what about the job I was doing? And why did I switch? And was that an ego switch, you know, or was that actually following life? And is this job worthwhile? And if it's, you know, is it going to last or should I be looking for my next thing? All that stuff is, you know, how do I find the right livelihood? And it's not about all that at all. It's about showing up to whatever I'm signed up to do today and doing it, you know, with as much openness to guidance as I can.
Yes, exactly. And I wish there's, again, a quote floating around somewhere, but,
there are several in the assignment.
We always have Mother Teresa, too, right? That, you know, if God puts me in a palace, then I'm going to live in a palace. And if God puts me on the street, I'm going to live on the street.
Yeah.
It's a little different from our way of phrasing it, but the sentiment is exactly the same. Life will guide. Yeah. And what you're pointing at is that how you are, wherever you are, whatever you're doing, is all that matters. Not what the title is or not even what the assignment is. I mean, we know that you're not going to say yes to something that is obviously actively harmful.
So it's been great this week practicing with how, and as often happens for me on the year long, is that this week kind of pointed me to last week's assignment. So you know, as I'm looking for guidance, it tends to be about communication this week. That's just what's happening, which is great. It's been good. It's only Monday.
Well, and Dan, it's, you know, it's all of the words that we've already come up with today, and it's only Monday, right? It's profound. It's simple, right? And then if we add things like it's kind, you can trust it. It's like the biggest thing for us as awareness practitioners is getting that life is love and we are love. We can't even say life loves us because that creates a distance or a separation, right? Yeah. We are the love that is life. We can trust that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. And so whatever, you know, however I got talked into or guided into this palace or street that I'm living in doesn't matter because I'm not going to sit here and try and decide whether it was a good thing or a bad thing that I'm here.
That's right. That's right. Here I am. Here I am. Yeah.
So now what?
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. All right. Go, Abby.
Thanks, Dan. No, isn't that the truth, Sherry?
Yeah.
I think it's one of the most profound pieces of guidance I've ever received is in anything, whether it's in relationship to life or in relationship to someone else, the choice that we're making is how we choose, how we want to be.
Mm-hmm.
It's the quickest way to the unconditional. Because otherwise, I'm always trying to change the external.
Precisely. And that's not possible. Right?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, and with so much suffering when ego comes up against its own impotence.
Yes. Its own self-created impotence.
Impotence.
Right?
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Here's our next caller. You're now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Melissa in Hawaii.
Hey, Melissa.
Hey, Ashwini. I think this is fascinating, the how of it instead of the what of it. And what I've been seeing is that in my actual profession, I sort of pried myself out of something I was doing for 20 years and went and did something else. And it was terrifying. It was not a change I ever expected to make. And I didn't know if I would be any good at it and, you know, all those things. And it's ended up being just so freeing and wonderful. Like, even since I made that change, I've made other changes since then, like really big ones in what I do in my daily life. And I have come to think of it as what I do every day when I go to meetings with people is practice. Now I'm in conversation. Can I be present when I'm in this conversation? And when I'm, you know, deep into some spreadsheet, can I be present when I'm doing this, practicing the how of it? But what I'm seeing this morning now in this conversation is how getting pride out of something that I've been doing for 20 years tends to just be my thing. Like, I was living in a certain place for about 20 years and got pride out of it and have had all this turmoil around that. And I was in a marriage for 20 years that I, you know, probably shouldn't have been in for that long. And looking back, and I pride myself out of it. And there's like this prying thing I do. And then I'm like, oh shit, where am I? Oh, pardon my language. Oh heck, where am I? And then finally, like, settling into this new reality that is more about how than the what of an identity.
So noticing that there's a pattern of a forced exit after a long engagement, right? And just noticing that pattern raises a whole bunch of questions, because the first place a noticing of a pattern results in is possibly a conditioned conversation about it, right? And it's like, is this something that I do? And I think what we want to celebrate, right, Melissa, is that place of inquiry. I don't need to know the answer, because that trust that we're talking about allows me to be receiving the information that I need to receive. So if I have to do something about this pattern, I will be given information. If I don't have to do something about this pattern other than simply notice it, I'll be given that information also. But what my job is to just be here practicing the way you're talking about, so that I'm here for the information that's coming to me and be open to looking at everything. Is this pattern an ego pattern or a life pattern? Am I being guided to move on, or am I being booted out by a conversation? And I just get to look at that, not decide about it, but just simply look at it.
That's so interesting. I love that. I love you reframing that. I am pretty sure that it's not an ego conversation that's getting me out of it. And I am just noticing that it's happening. But you're right. The very next step is, well, why is it happening? And sort of, who cares? It just did happen.
Exactly. Yes, because my job in every moment is just to be here, practicing, being present, whatever it is that I'm doing, and noticing. So I notice the pattern. Well, what information does that pattern give me? In this moment, it may give me a piece of information, and like in the next now, whenever that is, it might give me a contrary piece of information. But that's all right, because I'm here for it, whatever it is. It's only contradictory in conditioned mind, or continuous in conditioned mind.
Mm-hmm. Will you say that last piece again? It's only what, or contrary in conditioned mind?
Well, let's just say I notice this pattern, and I get life gives me an insight about it. And then, you know, I'm recording and listening about it, and I get a different insight about it on a content level, that the insight might contradict each other. But that doesn't matter, because the contradiction is only a condition. Only in conditioned mind can you not receive contradictory information about the same pattern, right?
Yes,
and then
yes.
You go, which one was the right one? Well, both are right, because both happened when I was here for it.
Right. This is so interesting. Yes. And I notice in each of these areas, these big areas of my life, I make meaning after the fact. Like when I went into reporting, as my first career, I just did it because I like to write and to interview people. And it took me like five, I guess I had a bad education, because it took me like 5 years before anyone mentioned that it had anything to do with upholding democracy. And then suddenly I was like, oh, this has like all this big meaning. But really, the moves all come first.
That's right. And the meaning making comes afterwards. And it's not just you who does that, right, Melissa? I mean, that's what the meaning making, connecting dots, looking for cause and effect, all of these are just simply attributes of the mind. So we all do it. It's a very universal thing. Like, I have to make sense of it, right? I have to figure it out. I have to slot it. I have to categorize it. And that not thinking is dropping in here and just experiencing what you are. It's the how versus the what, right? Because the what is always about meaning. The how is simply about the experience.
So I have all this new information that may or may not be true about these patterns, and I don't have to make any meaning out of it. I can just be like, oh, look at that.
Well, and life will tell you if whatever it needs you to know.
Thank you, Ashwini. That's beautiful.
Thanks, Melissa.
So for years, as you well know, one of my favorite expressions is, well, who cares, right? I worked with this woman who, I mean, she hated it. She hated it that I said that. And she would lecture me regularly on how I shouldn't say that because it sounds so dismissive and disrespectful and all of it. And I'm still in the club of looking at just about everything that goes on as a big who cares, because the who cares is almost always ego. Okay,
that's
is
exactly
always
right.
Ego.
Well,
that meaning-making machine.
Exactly, and it's the same as the profoundest spiritual question, which is, who am I? Because
yes.
It directs the looking to where the concern or the interest or the guidance is coming from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Always back to here.
Always
all
back
right,
to here.
All right,
well, thank you so much, Sherry.
Launching a fabulous
week.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Ashwini.
Go happy.
Go happy.